listen, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right. So, it's all forgotten.
Hello. We're back again. That's me, Simon, and this bloke opposite, who's called?
Jan. Hello.
Yay.
Thanks for tuning in. We're back with episode number 17.
Number 17, indeed.
A prime number.
Yes. Very important.
Full of useful information.
Yes.
Today we're going to talk about the away game in Hanover on match day 13th.
Mm-hmm.
The home game against Frankfurt.
Indeed.
This past Saturday.
Yep.
Night. And we have some viewer questions, listener questions, some injury updates. Yeah.
I hope there's nobody viewing. I'm not a pretty sight, really, when it comes down to it.
Well, anything you want to say in advance?
In advance.
Maybe what your surroundings, what you're looking at. And
what am I looking at? I'm looking at a Harry Potter book that's propping up a microphone. That's very important.
Which one?
The Half-Blood Prince.
Ah.
And a big DMTF coffee mug.
Oh, and Simon made himself a shirt with the logo of the DMTF podcast.
I did.
On the chest and on the back it says
I'll tweet a picture of that later.
Can't wait.
Including the back. I'll keep you on tenderhooks until that time. I'm sorry, dear listener, you're just going to have to wait. Anyway, we digress once more. So, first game. Away, just down the road in Hanover.
At the beautiful HDI Arena.
Yes. What happened there then?
We had 35,000 spectators, and the referee was...
What, Hertha fans? That's an excellent turnout.
Spectators.
Sorry.
Hertha fans was 4,000, I guess, but I'm not sure. Referee was Dr. Brich. World-famous FIFA referee who was only
used... As opposed to Brick.
He was only used in one game at the World Cup. I'm just happy there's no Brich song.
No, right. I'll try not to sing. I don't think the world's ready for my singing.
I don't think you're going to manage. Yeah, the game ended 0-2. At halftime, it was a 0-1.
Yep.
Why don't you give us the team?
The team? Well, you had old Rune Jahrstein in goal. Excellent fellow. Got Lazaro, Lusty, Tornariga and Plattenhardt along the back. With Grujic and Arnie Meyer just ahead of them.
Defensive midfield.
Indeed. Then you've got Lecky and Kalou running around the place, as they do.
Was it Lecky's first comeback? Wasn't he out?
That was his first... Was that his first start?
Yeah, and the first time back. Wasn't it the first game after the international break?
Mm.
Well prepared.
Yeah. And then up front, both Ibisevic and Selke.
Which is also a first.
Yeah, so... It's a first
season.
Start, I think. I mean, they have gone out together on the field, but I don't think they've started like that. So that's quite an offensive approach to the game.
But also, Hertha didn't have the option at the beginning of the season because of the horrible injury that Selke sustained during training camp, the collapsed lung.
It's extraordinary.
Okay.
But he's been gradually sort of let back in, hasn't he? He's sort of come on as a substitute and
scored a goal in Düsseldorf, the lone goal in a pretty abysmal game.
Yes, no, we're not going there either. So anyway. What exciting things happened. Grujic did pretty well. Pretty exciting midfield player. What did Pal Dardai say just recently? He sort of tweeted something, didn't he, I think? Or
Dardai doesn't tweet. Dardai doesn't tweet.
Well, no, so he was quoted in a tweet by somebody then.
After the next game we're going to talk about, he said something.
But he was saying about what a good midfielder he is, isn't he? And he certainly is. I mean, quite early on in the game, and not exactly sort of when you know, exactly what minute or whatever. But he seemed to sort of dribble his way around about sort of three or four Hanover defenders.
Pretty early on
and crack a shot away, which sort of went, if I can picture it rightly, it was went just left past the post.
Just left.
So it was pretty damn close. But the way he skipped around the defence was impressive. He's a nice little acquisition. It'd be quite good if we could hang on to him, but
it's not an acquisition, really. It's more
I can't see it happening, but
hey. It's more of a loan.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah, they always praise him for his calm at the ball, how he is able to react to what the other players are doing. He's really good at dribbling the ball.
Mm. And that was a case in point in that particular instance there. It was very impressive. He was in full control the whole time. And okay, he didn't quite get the shot in that he might have wanted, but pretty impressive nonetheless.
And it's helpful because Hertha always has this vacuum in midfield, which was in the beginning of the season was filled by Duda.
Hmm.
No song? Okay. who we've seen maybe go down a bit conditioning-wise or... No, he hasn't been performing that well.
No. I mean, he got off to a truly awesome start to the season. Nobody's in form all the time, so...
And he hasn't even played in that game. He wasn't even subbed in or anything. But Daray stated that he's very sensitive and he has to always take care of him. He needs all the confidence he can get from his coaches.
Yeah.
And he had to talk to him. And in this particular game, he said that he, because he had both Ibišević and Selke up front, there was no room for him in the tactical system.
Yeah.
Well, game went on. I didn't think the game was that good. I think I'm pretty alone here with that.
Well, the result was certainly quite satisfactory. Thank you very much. Kalou had a bit of a crack at it, didn't he? He sort of wellied the ball in, but the keeper got a boot to it and out it went. So I mean, there were chances there, not huge number, but
in the end, you had 13-11 shots for Hertha.
Mm-hmm.
But Hannover managed to put two shots on target. So,
at least one of those that I can picture was
an easy grab.
Yeah, well, just a bit. Yeah, I think it was slightly miscued, and it sort of came off. You know, sort of spun off the side of the boot, and it went pretty well. It was A, it wasn't hit very hard, and B, it went straight to Runa. So, no problem.
Kalou had a good game, but the little things didn't work.
Didn't quite work, yeah.
If they work, he has a perfect game and gives two assists and scores a goal.
Mm.
And this time it was always a bit too slow. Maybe he celebrated too hard with us when he had this one beer.
It could be. He probably still hung over, I expect. That's what it was. You can not actually have a direct input to the game in, you know, scoring goals or assists or what have you, but if some of the opposition players are sort of running around, you know, keeping on top of him, then it gives a little bit of room for other people to perhaps get away with things.
That's what Ibišević always does.
Yeah.
He just handles the ball with the back to the goal and then changes the size and puts it over there. And people always have to... the defense always has to focus on him, and that's how he creates more room. For example, for Selke. The first goal came after a corner kick. Yes? No?
I don't think it was it?
It was a corner kick.
Yeah. I do remember if it came from... I'll take your word for it, Jan. Yeah. All right, I'll take your word for it. Don't panic. I do remember Selke getting hold of the ball prior to the goal. And he held the ball up with his back to one of the Hanover players. And then, because he put the ball up towards...
Ibišević, and he headed it over the goal.
Ah, of course, that was a miss, wasn't it? That wasn't the goal.
Yeah.
That was the miss. Yeah, because it was about 2 or 3 inches over the top of the bar, wasn't it?
Maybe 6-7 inches.
Oh, come on. You exaggerate. But I do remember, yes, Sulker, because when you were saying before about Ibisevic sort of holding the ball up, he was doing just that then. And the cross over the top was quite neat. But, hey, didn't work out on that occasion.
So. Yeah, Ibisevic was in the process of going down again, so he didn't have the opportunity to put power behind the ball. That's why it went over.
Mm.
There was a corner kick taken by Lazaro. Lazaro and Jordan Torunariga ran into the box and
bang.
Headed over three defenders into the left corner.
Yeah.
And they did a little dance.
And why not?
But it's not a Fortnite dance, I guess. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't know.
Oh,
not a Fortnite.
On Sky, they always talk about which Fortnite celebration they use. Yeah,
but washes over my head, I'm afraid. Like most things, really. Let's be honest about it.
I'm going to cut that out.
Okay then.
Headed by Torunariga right before halftime.
Excellent. Cracking good timing. Was it 44th? Was it
44?
Yeah. So a minute before halftime is always a nice time to score. Go in, all happy and jolly,
and really beautiful.
Hmm.
Yeah. First Ooh. Half over.
Done. Yeah. But it didn't end there.
Yes, it didn't end there. In the second half, okay, I throughout the whole game I had the feeling we're going to lose this at some point.
As I always say, never underestimate the ability of Hertha to cock things up. But...
And the last away game in the spring, Hertha went down 3-0 against Hannover.
Yeah,
and even if they didn't have many chances on goal, but they had chances to shoot, and if the shot went any was a bit more dangerous, there could easily be a goal.
Yeah,
if you say they only put two goals on a target, they're totally harmless. I'm not really sure if that's the case.
Well, one of them was completely harmless, but
we had a substitution in the 69th minute. Mittelstädt came on for Kalou, first time back after his
indiscretion.
Yeah. And it was right after a corner kick. That's why Torunariga was still in the front. Because he's usually in centre-back, so he's not really involved.
Not really a striker kind of guy.
But he used to be a striker. He used to be a striker as a young player. That's why he's so... That's what they always say when they talk about him.
Mm.
The commentator on Sky also said he was born in Berlin, which is factually wrong because he was born in Chemnitz. But hey.
Close.
And Torunariga was still in the front and he got the ball on the left hand side out of the wing and he chipped it in pretty nicely to the middle. And Ibisha, which was a bit by him, there were some defenders, but they didn't really seem to care. And he just.
Yeah,
take the header.
Ibisevic just did what Ibisevic does and
slammed it in.
Bang!
Into the left corner.
Thank you very much.
And that was game over, pretty much.
Yeah,
I mean, it was hard to lose that one. And Pascal Köpke had his first was subbed in the 80th minute for Ibisevic, which is his first appearance.
In a
Bundesliga game. Mm. Because before he only played in the friendly matches over the international break, I guess. So maybe a striker for the future, taking into account the age of Ibisevic, 34 or something?
Something like that, yeah.
So let's hope he can build on that. He's a bit famous because he's the son of Andreas Köpke, who was also with Hertha at some point, and he was the national the goalie for the national German team. I think he also won maybe the European Championship in 1996. I'm not sure. But he's known. Mm. And he's his son. His father was goalkeeper. He's a striker. Well, Klinsmann's son is a goalkeeper. Klinsmann was a striker. Other way around.
It's funny how it works out like that sometimes, isn't it? But,
And then Dade was subbed in. The young Dade was
young Dade.
For Lecky in the end. And we
I think Dade is the son of somebody, isn't he?
Yeah, of Monica Dade.
Well, there you go. I knew it must be somebody.
I'm not even sure if that's her right name.
It sounded right, actually. It might be. I'm not sure either.
Mrs. Dade.
It doesn't really matter. It really doesn't. So,
oh, in the 94th minute, you had a shot by Mittelstädt that went through the legs of the keeper.
Yeah.
But somebody managed to clear it right at the goal line, so it was really, really close.
It was really close. I mean, the ball was over the line, but not completely.
Yeah.
Because I sort of saw a replay of that afterwards, and it was astoundingly close.
And the keeper managed to slow the ball down, so it was really...
Yeah, so a defender just managed to get in there. Yeah. It looked like it was just going to creep over, but no. That would have been quite impressive, but it wasn't to be.
What I still find remarkable is that Hertha's distance covered goes down and down and down. Last time it's been more than the other team was Bayern, the home game against Bayern, and then the away game at Schalke.
See, they're just being economical. They're saving energy.
I'm not sure. It's not a good stat, but it's just last season was different. We always ran closer, and we're now 3-4 kilometers less than the other team.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, maybe somebody who knows something about football can explain that to us.
Yeah. It's a mystery to me.
For the expected goals, Hertha performed within. It was 2.11, and Hertha scored 2 goals, so it's well within the statistical thingy.
You would kind of expect Hertha to have been able to beat Hanover the way they've been sort of playing during this season, but like I said before, Hertha seemed to be able to mess things up, but this time they didn't.
Düsseldorf, for example.
Well, for example, yes. God, that was awful.
So after the game, Hertha had 20 points and was in 7th place.
Yeah.
Everybody happy?
Mm-hmm. Not too bad at all.
Really?
So we can move on to the next game.
Yeah.
Right?
Rightio.
Last Saturday. Today is Monday.
Hi.
And last Saturday it was Eintracht Frankfurt.
Indeed.
On match day 14 at the Olympiastadion.
Indeed.
42,578 spectators. And the referee? Give us the name, Simon.
Referee? Schlager? Daniel Schlager. He didn't do a song, did he?
You have to explain that.
No. It's a kind of German music, Schlager.
Yeah, the worst kind.
I use that in the loosest sense of the term. But so that's hence my reference to singing. So we won't go there. Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia somewhere if you feel that way inclined.
But don't listen to any of the...
Yes, just don't examples, listen. Don't look it up on YouTube. just don't go there. Right, so who do we have playing this time then?
The same people.
Yes, indeed, it was.
Yeah.
It's the same setup completely, wasn't it, really? So again, there's two up front.
But they changed a little bit in the last game. We had Ibišević more in the front and Zelka hanging back a bit. Mm. And this game was the other way around. Ibišević hanging back and Zelka being the go-to player in the front. Yeah. Everything else stayed the same. Lustenberg and Truna Riga. I was a bit anxious about the whole thing because Eintracht Frankfurt has...
If I was honest, gentle listener, Jan said we were going to lose that game.
I bet on it.
Oh, you weren't brimming with confidence. But
have you seen them play? Because I looked at all the highlights from their games.
Yeah.
Remember how Hertha did in the Europa League?
I don't think anybody was really quite expecting what happened, to be honest.
Some people always do, but I didn't. And
you hope, but hope is not the same thing as expect.
They're in first place in their Europa League group. They were third, fourth in the league. In the beginning, they won the DFB Pokal last season with Niko Kovac, who has then left them for Bavaria.
Yeah.
And everybody...
Strange fella.
And everybody was counting on them to totally What's the word that I can use here?
Tank?
Tank, yeah, tanks. Thank you. I was okay. To tank, and in the beginning, it looked like that they at the beginning of the season, there's always the so-called Super Cup, where the DFB Pokal winner plays against the
league winner.
The league winner, unless it would have been Bayern against Bayern, then the runner-up in the cup plays.
That would be an interesting game to watch.
And I think they went down 6-0 or 5-0. And they lost. They crashed out of the DFB Pokal in the first round against some non-league team or lower division team. And then they lost their first few games. And everybody was ready to think that Adi Hütter, who came from Young Boys Bern, the new coach manager, was on his way out already. And then they turned things around. And they have this front line of Sebastian Allaire, who was there last season, Ante Rebic, who did very well in the World Cup and was the runner-up for the World Championship, who also scored in the DFB Pokal Finale. And there's Luka Jovic, who is a former teammate of Marko Grujic. And I found a picture online when they were playing at Red Star Belgrade in their when they were teenagers. It's a pretty nice picture. Jovic had really long hair. Anyway, not very helpful on the podcast because I can show you the picture. They knew each other and they have been doing very, very well. They've been stomping through the league. They are referred to as the Bulls or the Buffaloes.
Okay.
Yeah. But they lost their first game after 9 non-defeated games or something like that last week in Wolfsburg with a 1-2. They went down. So,
anyway,
night game. How did you get there? I didn't see any videos of you walking there. Have you stopped doing that?
No. I got fed up with doing those videos.
But they're so cute.
How do I get there? S-Bahn.
S-Bahn.
Still running, but usually go by S-Bahn. Yes. Anyways, there was a strike this morning with regional trains and the S-Bahn. So hence,
but all over Germany.
I'm mentioning that.
All over Germany.
Yeah. So things were a bit sort of messed up here this morning. Anyway, so we got there by S-Bahn in the stadium. I think you said about the crowd number, didn't you? About
42,578.
So it was reasonable turnout of people, not very big, but then again, not small either.
I think the Saturday night games is when the families from around Berlin usually don't come because it's too far away for them.
And doing other stuff, perhaps in the evening.
Quite a lot of loud and very active away fans from Frankfurt.
Yes.
Oh, we had. Was separated this time because it's always a high risk game against Frankfurt. So there were, if you went through the southern entrance, there was a cordon and you couldn't walk through.
Yeah.
But then I met other Frankfurt fans in our block and talked to them and everything.
Yeah, they were.
But they were separated.
You see that a lot. But in the separated section,
I'm just happy.
The away block.
I'm just happy we made it out alive because of all the dangerous flares.
It was a constant stream of flares going off throughout. I don't know if it wouldn't have been sort of visible probably on most of the sort of TV showings of it all.
It's very visible on the a video I will link by Andy Green, who's a groundhopper who went to the game.
I'll put a photograph on the website to show it all. But it wasn't just. There was like a constant stream, wasn't
it? I think it was 14 we counted.
Did you count them?
14 times.
It was, I mean, sometimes it was, like 3 or 4 flares going off along the front. And other times it was just like one.
And then
sometimes they ended up in the moat, didn't they? Excuse me, dear Lester. Excuse me.
Bless you, Simon.
Thank you very much. Yeah, sometimes the flare ended up going into the moat and.
They threw it across the moat and then the stadium security would.
Did they just lob it back in again? Yeah, obviously.
And the stadium announcer.
Oh yeah, every time. Yeah,
but it got gradually more more severe than the other. Please, well, think of all the others with the safety issue. Think of all the kids. Please, stop that. You're putting everybody at the stadium in harm, and your club has to pay a big, big fine. And then after some point, he just stopped saying something in the second half.
Because they clearly weren't taking any notice whatsoever, so...
Yeah, but
it's unusual. I mean, sometimes you'll have like a big show of flares and things, you know, like before the game or at halftime or something. But this was a slightly different format in that there seemed to be, you know, okay, so the game's a bit quiet at the moment. What shall we do? Oh, yeah, let off another flare. It almost seemed like that, you know, every few minutes suddenly, oh, there's another one. Got a bit boring by the end, really.
But it really shows how the situation in Dortmund could have been handled differently.
Yeah,
because nothing happened. Police came out at some point.
No riot police. No tear gas.
There was a bit of police showing up, and they started filming everybody. What we talked about earlier, that in earlier episodes, that people usually get filmed, and then if they can
identify,
and then they get banned from the stadium. But I wasn't bothered by it.
No,
it was more of a little funny thing on the side. Oh, Pyro. First time. Oh, I haven't had a pyro in 5 minutes.
Yes. Oh, there's another one. Yeah. But, I mean, sometimes you have a whole load being let off and then a whole stadium fills with smoke and you can't see the other end of the pitch. But it wasn't like that, was it? I think perhaps because there wasn't a whole load going off all at once, it was just sort of, you know, small groups of them. And also it was quite breezy on the night.
Yeah, as such, the Olympiastadion is very breezy as such.
Yep.
So if you there was a flare on Sunday, some flares on a Sunday match, I think in Mainz or somewhere, and they had to stop the game because everything, you couldn't see anything. But there,
because of the open end of the stadium at the Marathon Tor end, the wind can get in. Because some of the flags and things that are being sort of held up, you know, the big flags in the Ostkurve, they didn't actually have to wave them. They just hold them up in the air, and the wind was actually sort of blowing out the flags in behind. And of course, that would disperse all the smoke from the flares and things.
And so, in the second half, there were a whole lot of crosses by Frankfurt just going all the way through the box without anybody touching them. I think it was also due to the wind conditions. But it's not only the Marathon Tour, it's the entire stadium. The wind can get it where
it can escape, can't it? Because it can go out through the entrances, through to the walkway. Between the roof
and the
seats.
Yeah,
there's a gap there too. Yeah.
Anybody who's been there in January or February or December knows that.
Yes.
It's kind of breezy.
Oh, God, yes. That could be so cold.
The only person at the stadium who's in shorts who's not playing is Simon.
Not in February, not even me. I walked to Jan's flat there this afternoon, and I was just had a thin jumper on.
A coat
was in the bag, and Jan was horrified, I think. When he, yes,
I'm just worried about your well-being.
I don't feel the cold.
And you just sneezed.
I did. Yes,
so
probably why.
Caught
yes.
something there.
Yes.
I think we were talking about the game.
Yes, we were. We were. I got distracted then. I'm easily distracted. What can I say? The game. Well, first off, Hertha were, I thought, pretty impressive. From quite early on, they took the game to Frankfurt. They weren't sort of, you know, sitting back and trying to defend. They were probably quite a good idea when most of our defence are injured.
That was my biggest fear. My line of reasoning was, okay, they have Frankfurt has a very good front line with all these fast but yet still sturdy and big players. Mm. And Lustenberger with his very, very tiny for a centre back. And John Tuneniga, I thought there would be no match for them, but boy, was I wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be wrong. Overall, you had 18-7 shots for Frankfurt, in Frankfurt's favor. But the shots on target were a different thing, with Hertha having 4 on target and Frankfurt only 3.
Yeah.
There was always a certain kind of...
They've been lucky. I think it was on the 10th minute, or it was quite early on in the game anyway. There was a shot from Frankfurt that went past Rooney Arstein and just came off the outside of the post.
Possible.
That was scary. That was couldn't in the ground. You couldn't see it. It looked like he had just missed and it went past. But looking at the replay, the highlights and things afterwards, it just clipped the outside of the post and went away. That was close.
And in the second half, there were some crazy saves by.
It was an absolute corker. One of them from Jostein. Absolute corker. One-handed job just palmed out the way.
Oh, the other one. That was.
Dead impressive.
But the sole goal of the game would come in the 40th minute. Before you mentioned Guric before and his brilliance.
Yep.
It was a free kick. It looked like a corner, but it was a free kick after Plattenhardt was fouled or not fouled.
Yeah. It was pretty damn close to the corner, wasn't it?
It
wasn't very far away.
Yeah, it was a free kick by Plattenhardt and Grujic ran into the box, jumped higher than Hasebe and just put it in there.
And bang. The players after that, they went storming off down towards the Ostkurve.
I think they were just following Grujic.
He just took off. He absolutely just took off. But they were celebrating like we just won the championship. It was just they were just so pleased with themselves. It was nice to see. It was nice, and they went and shared it with the fans down in the Ostkurve, which I think always goes down well, doesn't it?
The funny thing is, Ibišević, if he scores, he jumps over all the.
The advertising hoardings and things around the outside. Things,
but Guric ran around it.
Yes.
And he was thinking about making a turn right to go to the bench and celebrate with the coach, but then he went to the fans and they really loved that.
Yeah.
And I think I saw some Frankfurt players complaining that Hertha was celebrating too much.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, tough.
They were really complaining a lot.
Yes, grouching. But Dardai was, there were lots of hands being thrown up in the air and what have you.
Very, very theatrical.
Yes.
Falling down. Yeah. I mean, Kalou was called for some fouls. Where I would just think Kalou doesn't even know how to foul somebody in a way that the other person hurts himself.
No, I just can't imagine that. He's too much of a gent, I think, Kalou, for that kind of caper.
We got some questions about the referee.
Yes.
That's a long story. Anna mentioned that.
Anna mentioned. Hello, Anna.
Yes.
Well, at the time, it seemed to me. Now, I would have to confess that I am completely biased. It seemed to me that every time something appeared to happen to a Hertha player, when they appeared to have been fouled, he just sort of waved it on.
Yeah.
Seemed to happen quite a lot. And then some little piddling thing happened to a Frankfurt player and he blew his whistle.
I wouldn't exactly agree because I think he just had no consistency in the way he called things. I think there was no bias towards one or the other teams. At one point he whistled nothing when Lazaro's leg was kicked out from under him.
I did say I was completely biased.
Yeah.
To be fair.
His consistency was bad for all the teams.
Mm.
And then they had the controversial call in the 87th minute, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Kalou had a pretty he had a bit of an off game. He was called for lots of fouls and he didn't contribute that much. He carried the ball over the left quite okay or well. But nothing big happening.
Yeah.
So he was replaced by Maximilian Mittelstädt, who took over the left.
Okay.
And then in the 81st minute, Duda came on for Ibišević.
Right.
No song? Okay. Simon passes again. and then in the 90th minute, Shelbert came in for Arne Meyer.
Mm.
Well.
Haven't seen Shelbert for a while. Has he been injured?
No,
or just not fitted in with
I think he played some. No, he didn't play against Düsseldorf. That's why I was so upset because he would have been needed in Düsseldorf.
Mm.
Yeah, he's getting sliding out of the rotation somehow.
Yeah,
but when he comes in, he always does well. And Dade has also said that he has trouble telling him that he's not playing at the moment, and he's really upset about it. But it's a tough decision he probably has to make. I think with Meyer and Grujic in defensive midfield, Hertha is a lot more flexible offensively.
Yeah. But yeah, they're more sort of offensive.
But I'm also very biased towards Per Schelbred. So not everybody can play.
No.
And Hertha has 35 players on this on the roster. So maybe next spring when the people from injury all come back, it might be tougher for Dardai. Which he always calls a first world problem. That
yeah, so that's having too many players to choose from is a good problem.
I got a comment for the game by Matthew Brewster. Why don't you read it out, Simon?
Oh, comment. You're catching me on the hop there. What was that comment? I thought the defence was well organised, says Matthew. Lustig had a good game. I'd go along with that.
Yeah.
Lustig did all right.
Spectacular game.
Marvin also played well. Brackets at last. But he's still not contributing enough. I think I'd go along with that too. Selke is still trying to get some 90-minute form. He is taking game time away from Dudar. Although attack was difficult because
Hasebe
has good quality in their defence. I could almost say Hertha seemed competent. Ooh, come on, steady. Frankfurt looked frustrated. Yes, they definitely were. Lots of arms being thrown up in the air, and yes, they were getting well wound up. Lecky was his usual eager way. What he lacks in skill, he makes up for effort and speed, and a good win. Yeah, Lecky was a busy boy.
Pretty accurate.
Yeah.
At Surabaya Met.
Yeah.
Thank you for your comment.
So that was all good stuff.
He's taking game time away from Duda, yeah. But Duda hasn't been in the best of form, as I mentioned earlier. So.
I mean, he started off really well, but...
But the thing with Duda is, even if he plays well, I rarely see him because I think my competence level as a football spectator is pretty basic.
Yeah. You tend to, I think it's only sort of human nature really to an extent, that you tend to sort of like, once you start noticing somebody, you start perhaps looking out for them. And if early on in the game you don't notice them, you tend to focus on other people that you picked up earlier on. That's a theory anyway.
And I think the player who's taken playing time away from Duda is actually Grujic. Because Grujic is somehow trying to fill in that threat in the middle from midfield. That's more what Grujic does at the moment. But Dade has addressed that also and said that he wants to use him, and it's always it's a thin red line for him to not put him in there, because they were really hoping for him to finally blossom, which he really did in the beginning after his pretty horrible 2 years at Hertha. Well, any more things we had? Oh, yes, of course. We had the disallowed goal by Selke after halftime.
Yeah.
That was a real, real bummer.
At the time, because, of course, massive celebrations and things when the ball went into the net, because from our viewpoint, which is very much towards the Ostquerther end, it looked all good. From our perspective, and you glance across at the either linesman or the assistant referee, and didn't see any flags and things going up, sort of marking as offside. So everything looked good. And but again, looking at replays and things afterwards, you can sort of see what was going on. He was clearly, clearly offside.
Everybody was upset because the assistant didn't raise his flag when he called the penalty, but. Okay, the situation was Kalou had the ball it was a counter attack. Kalou had the ball in midfield, and he put a straight pass or a through pass to Selke, and Selke looked like he was not offside. He took the ball, he started dribbling towards the goal, and he kept looking at the assistant and checking, and there was no flag, so he figured, okay, it's fine. Then he came to, across keeper Trapp, who used to play for PSG. in the past. And he went towards the right and ran around him. Oh, it was the left.
It was left.
He dribbled to the left,
yeah.
Around the keeper and smashed it into the net.
Yeah.
And because everybody had seen that there was no flag, everybody was really celebrating and everything. And it took me maybe a minute to figure out it wasn't the goal.
Yeah, well, it didn't come up on the screen, so... And he sort of shot up and bellowed, yay!
And,
but it wasn't.
And because he called it offside, there was a free kick by Frankfurt, really, really close to midfield. So to me, it looked like a kickoff, but it was not. And I wanted to explain, he was offside by 1-2 meters.
He was clearly offside.
It was pretty
looking at the replay, he was. There's no question of a doubt about that.
But the reason that the assistants don't raise their flags anymore needs to be explained by the beloved video assistant referee.
Bibiana.
Oh, I mean the whole thing in general, because it's really heated discussion over here. What's your opinion on the VAR?
Doesn't remove all problems. I mean, some people really don't like it, saying that it slows down the game and what have you. You can still have a mistake. If you're sitting in front of a screen and it can still go wrong. But if that is used to remove some of the glaring mistakes that happen sometimes, then I think it's a good thing, personally. I know a lot of people don't agree with that, but there you go.
Everybody's still going to complain.
Yeah.
But it's
got to be used correctly.
Yeah, and that's the problem. There's no real consistency within the Bundesliga. But it's also coming to the Champions League after the group stage, I heard.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody over there in England is going to have to worry about that soon. And the Premier League is also adopting it.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that. I don't tend to follow the Premier League that much, really, to be honest. But I believe it is. So the people that don't like it will not be happy, but hey-ho.
Anyway, the reason for the assistant to not raise his flag is that it's actually used for the advantage of the attacking team, because if the player was indeed onside and the assistant raises his flag, he would be the chance to score a goal, a regular goal, would be taken away from him.
Mm.
That's why the referees are asked to wait until the ball is out of play. Yep. So either in the goal or the attack went down or something like that. Because if a goal is scored before the whistle blows, it can count and it can be disallowed.
Yeah.
But if you blow your whistle then you take...
take away the opportunity to score the goal.
Yes. And it was really, really bad to be there and see that. I was really upset.
It kind of makes sense. It does make sense. But at the time, it was a little bit frustrating for fans to be in the stadium. And
very.
Yes, I was sort of bursting a blood vessel, jumping up and down and things, and then it wasn't.
And that's one of the big arguments made by the opposition to the video provider, that it takes away the emotion of the game.
Oh, there was plenty of emotion there. And it was just dashed. That's all.
I want that game back. I want that goal back. 2-0 would have been fine.
That would have been fine and dandy, but it. Hey.
But it wasn't to happen, so we had to. Yes. I think Hertha.
Suck it up, I think, is what we had to do.
Hertha hung on. They clung to the game, but it was really close.
Absolutely corker of a save from Rini Arstein.
After that disallowed goal, there was hardly any more offense by Hertha.
No.
There was this one, shortly after that.
Hanging on for grim death, I think is what
shortly
it was.
Shortly after that, Zeki got the ball again, and he ran towards the keeper, and he went to the right this time.
Yeah.
But there was a little, the grass wasn't that smooth, and the ball
a hopped bubble.
Up. Yeah. A little mole. So, and that was the last, after that had
to... I mean, it was saved. I mean, the keeper, keeper got a boot to it, that one wasn't to be.
But that was the last big chance, I remember.
That I can think of, yeah.
Afterwards was all defending, which they did well, but it always upsets
me. There's some pretty key blocks being put in by Lustli in particular, but also sort of Jordan Torunariga.
Everybody.
Yeah, because it was pretty...
Even Marvin.
Pretty, even Marvin. It was, hanging on for grim death, really.
But it's so frustrating whenever Hertha goes up by one goal and then they stop. And you always want them to score at least the second goal to have some little cushion.
I mean,
and it doesn't happen.
I mean, after the goal, there were some chances where they were, but it was more sort of, trying to score on the break, really, rather than actually playing really offensively like we did in the first half.
But the counterattacks always broke down. There were bad passes and everything.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, things just not going straight. I mean, the closest one that was is that one with Selke, where their sort of keeper got a boot to it. But yeah, as we've said, it wasn't to be. And then in the 87th minute, there was a little bit of excitement going on.
I didn't know about it after the game when I looked into the chats.
Well, that's one of the periods when the Frankfurt players were getting very animated and lots of hands being thrown up and what have you, because they thought there should have been a penalty.
But I sensed a certain feeling of frustration by them after somewhere in the second half at some point, because they realized, okay, I think it got windier and all their attacks didn't really... They were close, but they never really got anywhere, and some of the crosses were just totally off target.
Mm.
And I had this feeling that they were getting really, really frustrated.
Yeah.
But we only had one yellow card for Selke, which I think is very, very peculiar, the way the game was played.
Yeah, he'd... Odd whether we lost his cards part of way through the game, I don't know. We'll see.
And the crowd wasn't heavy with the keeper compared to other games. There were lots of jeers and whistling by the home fans.
What?
What? The crowd wasn't happy with the... Referee.
Oh, the referee.
What did I say?
You said keeper. I thought...
Oh, sorry.
You're cracking up. I was going to say, what? No. Well, yeah, there were lots of hands being thrown up in the crowd and interesting comments being sort of shouted out towards the ref. Whether that was justified or not, the crowd were not happy.
So 87th minute, we had a cross from the left, I think, or something like that. The ball was in the box and Grujic was dancing with Jovic.
Yeah.
Pretty,
yeah.
Slow dancing.
Yes.
There were lots of pushing and tugging going on.
There was lots of sort of pushing and tugging and things on both sides. I think the key
thing.
Don't say
on both sides. You can't say on both sides these times.
No?
No, it's Trump.
Oh, really?
There were fine people on both sides. Okay.
Well, it was six of one, half a dozen of another. I tried to explain this phrase to Jan, but I don't think I managed to get there.
Maybe you have to translate it for the people over the pond.
So
they were both pretty animated in this.
Yeah, there was lots of tugging and shoving and things. And it ended up with the Frankfurt player, forgotten who he was again.
Jovic.
He leant back into Grujic and going down as he did so. And he thought that justified a penalty. And I disagreed.
You know what Grujic did? After that, he took the ball and he went outside the box and then he fouled somebody again.
Is he?
Yeah.
And I didn't notice that.
And my wife said maybe he did that so he would change the situation and then the whole thing, if there's a continuation of
yes.
of play, then they cannot check anymore. So he just did the foul outside there so he would take away the... Ooh.
If that were true, that was rather sneaky. What a devious mind you must have, that's all I can say.
And after the game, he also said that Jovic asked him after the game what happened and he said, I didn't even foul you.
It didn't look like it to me, but hey.
But I think in the highlights, it's one of those things. If he calls it, it's a penalty, and it won't be overturned by the video assistant referee. If he doesn't call it,
it's not going to either, because it was there was no clear, definite mistake either way. It could have been called, and as you say, things like that get given sometimes. I don't agree with it, but sometimes they're given. But it wasn't, so what can you do?
German media said it was a mistake to not call them, or the refereeing podcast also said was a mistake to not, or a review by Bibiana Steinhaus. But I think that's what people always think, that what the DFB was telling people, that the video assistant referee will bring justice to the game, but it doesn't bring justice. It just tries to avoid other mistakes, and you will still have all these scenes where it can be this or that.
I mean, I can only assume that the referee on the field was confident in his decision, so he didn't feel the need to.
That's what I think. But it was the biggest talking point for the Frankfurt coach the press conference afterwards, and the sporting director was on a big German sports show on Saturday night and said he was... What did I say earlier?
Can't remember. Forgotten.
But he was really, really upset.
Wasn't happy.
Yeah. He made a big thing out of it. But I think, okay, we were lucky in that situation, but they had so many chances to score a goal. Why didn't this go on one of the other 18 shots on?
Yeah.
They put in. But we got lucky. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Yep, absolutely. And to be fair, I think the defence were... our defence, that is, did a remarkable job.
Mm.
And there were some really sort of top-notch clearances. Whereas before, perhaps in the past, people would have tried to sort of pass the way out of it and what have you. But countless times during the course of this match, they basically just hoofed the ball out. I mean, there's one that I can picture. I can't remember who it was that actually sort of kicked it.
I think it was Lecky.
Was it Lecky? Whoever it was, they absolutely wellied it, and it went sort of down halfway down the pitch and then across the lines for a throw-in for the other team. I mean, that's a clearance. That is that's the way to do it. So that was good to see. You know, bear in mind all our defensive injuries, sort of issues and what have you. And I think they did a remarkable job.
And in contrast to other games, like the maybe it's not comparable because it was Dortmund. In Dortmund game, Lustig was always in the wrong place. Also, they were standing in the wrong position. But then Meyer, Grujic and Lustenberger and Turinariga often intercepted passes.
Mm.
Especially in the first half. They wouldn't even get into the box that much.
Yeah.
That was pretty neat. And
yeah, it's good stuff.
And Lustenberger had a really, really great game.
He did. He did, yeah. Cool.
That game. We're now at 23 points, sixth place, and we're tight for points with number five, which is still Eintracht Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
So Hertha keeps up with the top group, but I still think we don't really belong up there.
No. I think there's a question or a comment that came from somewhere about Champions League stuff. No, I don't think so. No.
Especially if Grujic leaves after the season.
Yes, that could make quite... There's some interesting stats and things flying around about the impact that Grujic has on the team and the performance. He's a bit handy for us, really. Let's be honest about it. But
there's no option to buy, and even if there was an option to buy, I don't think Hertha could afford it.
No, I doubt it. I mean, it's not impossible that the loan might be extended. That's a possibility. So he gets plenty of playing time.
Yeah, but in the end, it doesn't help the team that loaned the player, because the loanee or the team that received the player on loan, because the player's there for them, but then he's gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, time will tell.
One can still dream.
Yes, indeed.
So are we done with the game? Did we have anything
done with the game,
else?
I think.
Hertha ran less again. XPG was well overperformed by Hertha, who had only 0.23 to 1.14, but that's what Hertha does.
Yeah.
Overperform.
Sometimes.
I was really, after the game, was exhausted.
Mm.
Hertha always keeps you on your toes. When have they put a...
Never a dull moment.
Putting a game away? Why? Why should we?
No.
That's why I was so upset about the goal being disallowed. Would have been perfect. Second half, up two goals, go home.
Well, but no, they seem to enjoy putting us through all this stress.
But the fans were happy. Celebrations going on with the fans after the game?
Yeah,
I really had to go somewhere, so I didn't see.
No, it was really nice. There was sort of lots of singing and things. I put a thing up on YouTube to show it. But the team came around, and there was a long gradual build up from the Oskova, with lots of singing ultimately, and then the whoa, what do you call that, Jan, when they do that?
The ufta.
Woofta.
No, what they do is the thing where they sit down. That's the ufta.
They stayed standing.
Okay, because sometimes they do the sit down, and then they say, he spells out the ufta, ufta, tetere.
Yeah, he didn't go through all that stuff.
Okay, so it's just a chant. They go A, and
that's
then they clap.
That's the one.
I don't think it really has a name.
No, it's one of those things anyway. If you're really interested, they'll, on the website and things, there'll be a link to YouTube.
I'm also going to link to the YouTube video by Andy, maybe. I haven't seen the entire thing, but there are some fan reactions in there.
Yeah.
At least. Okay.
Anyway.
That's the game. I think it's a close win, not a good win, as Matt said, but sometimes you just have to be lucky.
Yeah. We've had plenty of bad luck before in the past, so, you know.
And I want to say earlier, the celebrating between the fans and Hertha was also the players and the fans. Remember a few weeks back when there was the boycott by the fans?
Yes.
And so we were wondering if that's going to come back, and luckily it came back right after.
Oh, yeah, that home game. Yeah. So that one game was just...
So we dodged that bullet.
It was really, really, really weird. But no, all back. Great stuff.
Oh, two more things.
Oh, two more things.
We had some accidents happening and a loss of life.
Oh, that's sad. That was, yeah.
The first one was that while celebrating after the first goal, a fan fell into the trench. But later at night, I saw a tweet that he was at the hospital. They could talk to me, was out of critical condition. Mm. So that went...
Just for those people not aware, the trench or the moat runs around the whole pitch, just outside the running track part of things. Concrete lined, rather hard down there. And it's quite deep, isn't it, as well?
I never jumped in there, so I wouldn't...
I've looked down into it, but I've never... you wouldn't want to fall down there by mistake, I can tell you that much, for nothing. You know, it's quite deep, and that concrete's flipping hard. So he was quite a lucky lad, really. You know, you could crack your head on the side of that, and then you'd know about it. But anyway, he was okay, wasn't he, this guy?
Yeah, and then there was a stop. The support was halted for a certain amount of time. And I was wondering if something had happened, and that was
the case. I didn't notice at the time. But I saw tweets about it.
Yeah, you see the tweets later after.
Yeah,
the game.
Yeah.
So we hope that person recovers soon and can join.
Get back to supporting. Again. A little bit more carefully next time, hey?
And the other case I read on Twitter yesterday was that somebody as young as 37 years had a heart attack after the game while walking out to the Südtor and just... died of a heart attack before, and nothing happened. They couldn't resuscitate him or anything, so that's just a sad thing.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. Hey.
Well.
Right. Any other questions that we've got here?
I have the injury updates up next on the list because I wasn't really sure. I was losing track of all the injuries.
Oh, you and me both.
Is it? Yeah. So I compiled a list of all the injuries I knew of. Of course, you had Gersbeck out, which has been a long time gone. Then you had Julius Kade, the younger player from the youth team, who is actually on the squad, but he had his ankle was broken in October in a U23 game, so he's been out indefinitely. We had, I think we mentioned Stark before, who has a bruised foot and is officially out till December 16th.
He came back with the bruised foot, didn't he?
Yeah.
For one game.
And went back out.
It didn't work out very well, did it? No. So.
And Rekic has a torn muscle fiber out since the 15th of November, out indefinitely. And Dade said, you know, these injuries, they can take 2 weeks or 2 months. And So yeah. I think they basically have ruled him out for the rest of the first leg of the season also.
Until after the winter break.
Then Dilrosun, I think we mentioned that before. He was injured in his first start for the Dutch national team.
That was careless.
Yeah, he was subbed in and subbed out a few minutes later with a hamstring injury. So he's out for the rest of the first leg of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Lukas Klünter, who hasn't really played any role so far.
Not that I can remember.
The right defender has a torn muscle bundle and is out indefinitely. And now Lukasen, who was the last big center back we still had, who didn't have the best games in the past, he has a syndesmosis injury and is also ruled out for the rest of the first leg of the season. And on top of that, for a change, we have not a defender, but an attacker, a winger being injured. I read on Hertha's Twitter that Salomon Kalou had sustained a cut on the top of his foot and had needed stitches and is questionable for the next few games. He probably got those injuries when he was fouling all the other players.
Right, yeah, I suspect so.
So we hope that he can come back soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We live in hope.
Defensively, it's really a disaster at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess.
But then you also think maybe with the first leg of the season going the way it went, maybe Hertha's not going to mess it up royally in this come springtime.
Well, that's what we very often do. So I'm kind of hoping not this time around, because you've got a pretty solid foundation now. But that's happened before, and then it all goes belly up after the winter break. But fingers crossed, toes crossed, everything crossed. Really, we'll see.
So that's the injury updates.
Aye.
We have some listener questions. Handing it over to you, Simon.
One that has popped up from several different sources actually is one of which is from a player from not player listener from Cincinnati, going by the Twitter name of Ha Ho He Cincy. Would you say that?
Cincy.
It's
short for Cincinnati.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's a town.
I know. Shut up.
Ed Hatter, Cincy.
He's so annoying, listener. Right. What are your thoughts on the new stadium project? Is it actually official or just announced?
It's a very short question with...
a very long answer, very long potentially.
We talked about it before the show and you said something pretty sensible. Just to give people an insight into
come on, the listener won't believe that.
An insight into
you're just
things.
Being silly now.
An insight into the whole thing without getting into all the technicalities. Fact is, Hertha is playing in a very old non-football stadium.
Yeah.
That doesn't belong to them. Was built, or it wasn't built, but it was rebuilt or remodeled for the 1936 Summer Olympics.
No, it was built for the 36 Olympics.
But there was...
A Reich Stadion or whatever there before.
Reichsportfeld.
Which they demolished and built a new stadium there.
To show off the greatness of Nazi Germany.
That's the one. And it has been modified quite a bit since then.
For the World Cup.
For the 2005, wasn't it? I think it was. 2006? Yes, I think you... Yes, I believe you're right. Because it was roof. It had a roof put onto it, because there wasn't one originally.
There was a roof, but only at certain sections.
Yeah. Well, very originally, I don't think there was any roof at all. Back to 36. And there were certain things, like the stage... not the stage, it's a... The main tribune, there was like a platform that went out over the top, which was changed in 36 as well. And they've done lots of building down below, haven't they, as well?
Yeah, but you also have the problem of it's a historic landmark, and there's something in Germany called landmark law, and it gives you very narrow, you don't have much room to maneuver.
Yeah,
Yeah. So it's
in England, it's the equivalent of having sort of listed status, where there's very little you can actually do to the structure of the building. In this case, the stadium. Now, I mean, what are the drawbacks of?
One more thing, Hertha had some ideas for the remodeling going on before the World Cup, but since the city owns it, Hertha had no say in it. Hertha is just the tenant. Mm-hmm. Hertha only rents the stadium for the games.
Yep.
So if there's a game on Saturday, certain members from Olympiastadion and certain staff from Hertha walk around the stadium and look at every little thing and it takes a long, long time and look at everything if everything is fine. Mm-hmm. And I just heard from people at the club that it takes forever to be done, and then they have to do the whole thing after again. So it's a really
it's kind of weird if people sort of visit Berlin to go and see. Hey, absolutely, come and see a Hertha game. That's a given. But having a look at the stadium on a non-match day, and it's really quite weird because none of the Hertha banners and things are up in place. It looks quite bleak without all the banners and things up in place. It's a thing that's worth seeing. It's worth doing the stadium tour and things. You can see the changing rooms and all that kind of stuff down below. But as the club only sort of rents the place, all those banners and Hertha colours and things up all over the place are only there on the match day.
Michael Preetz often says that I think he just quotes somebody who said that the Olympiastadion is really beautiful when it's totally empty and when it's totally full. That's the two things, when it's really beautiful and when during Hertha games, there's a capacity of 76,000. And
I don't know about it being beautiful when it's empty. It does look
impressive.
It's impressive. It is. I mean, it's used as parts of film sets and things all the time. Yeah, it is. The walkways and things around underneath it with the little torches and things, you see that popping up in films.
Yeah.
If they're trying to show some sort of dystopian future or whatever, or dystopian past, come to that, they'll quite often use use that as a set for films or what have you. So, but it looks bleak when it's not set up. It's impressive, but bleak is the word that I would use when it's not kitted out for Hertha. Anyway, enough of this rambling.
No, financially, Hertha is only the tenant, so they don't make any money.
No.
And owning your own stadium would give you proceeds from having that stadium. That's, for example, how Borussia Mönchengladbach, they built their stadium a few years back, and that's how they managed to, apart from playing well, that's how they...
Playing well is quite handy, though. Isn't it?
But then that's also how they improved their cash flow.
Hmm.
And... Okay, it's a non-football stadium, so you have the running track around it.
Yep.
It's pretty windy, so the atmosphere doesn't carry that well.
It's all sauerkraut, that's what does that.
One thing that...
Sorry, just lowering the tone of things.
Okay. One thing that the city did for Hertha was that they changed the running track to a blue color.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's never full. Which is due, hardly.
Very rarely is it full.
Which is due to the big size of it. I think there's only one stadium that's sold, two stadiums that are sold out with the same capacity. It's Dortmund and Bayern. And Hertha have been floating around the idea of building their own stadium. It was they were talking about it when Hertha was performing well internationally in the late noughties, right?
Mm.
Then Hertha went down. Hertha became an elevator team for a couple of years, and now they're talking about it again. The idea would be to build a new stadium in the same complex, close to the stadium, and it should be a real football stadium.
Mm.
And
purpose-built football stadium.
Yes.
And about 50,000 capacity they're talking about?
40 to 50, something like that. And I've heard talks about they wanted to model it after the Bilbao Stadium, San Mamés, who rebuilt their stadium. And you've been there, maybe you can give us some.
I've been there. Well, it's quite a nice stadium. It's It's a nice stadium. It works well. We had to wait ages to get into the place because of all the security and what have you. But as a stadium, it worked. It worked well. It doesn't have the same sort of gravitas as the Olympic Stadium. I mean, the stonework and what have you in that place it does add a feeling to the place. I think personally, it's a brand new stadium. There's lots of sort of steel and plastic. If you look at the Allianz Arena in Munich, and it's all sort of lit up at night, it looks like some sort of IKEA light fitting. It doesn't look like a it doesn't look like a football stadium. I like the solidness of the Olympic Stadium, but that's just me, perhaps.
I think the worst part about the Allianz Arena is where they put the away fans right underneath the roof. In some other stadiums, you sit the away block goes all the way to the playing field, and yep. There you are somewhere up in the bleeder in the nosebleeds section.
Yes, yes.
Okay, there were lots of controversy about it because Hertha wanted to.
Well, at one point there was Mooty being out in Brandenburg somewhere, which is just insane, but that's been kicked into touch, hasn't it?
Yeah, but that was just
it was a ploy.
It was a ploy by Hertha to put pressure on the Senate,
yeah.
Who want Hertha to stay in the Olympic Stadium because they are
they're the main tenant, aren't they?
The main tenant, apart from a few concerts, and they don't know what to do with the stadium. For example, in Munich, where Bayern Munich moved from the Olympiastadion, which is now pretty much not used anymore, and the city has problems with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hertha wants their own stadium. The fans revolted against the idea to put it somewhere outside of Berlin.
Oh, that would have been crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It was only for negotiations, but well. And now the official status is that Hertha they have a lease with the city till 2025.
Mm.
They don't want to renew that. They want to have their stadium built. You said built by 2025.
There's something about them signing contracts or something, is there not, in the new year?
They want to. They want to sign a contract for the land, that they can rent the land. It's called the Erbbaupachtvertrag.
So they're still going to be renting, they're going to build a stadium on land that they rent?
Everybody has to.
Is that the way it works?
Unless you own the land, which is pretty...
Yeah.
I mean, the whole area around the Olympic Stadium is all a landmark.
Mm.
So it's not, you cannot really build houses there. And there's, the thing is, I have a hard time telling a concise story because there's so many things that need to be considered. And
there's all sorts of problems and things with it. I mean, it's perhaps you ought to write something at some point or other and stick it up somewhere. I mean, there were concerns about some of the residents close to the Olympic Park with noise, which I don't really quite understand, because the new stadium, if it were built, would be closer to the sort of residential areas, sort of adjacent to the park, allegedly. Didn't make an awful lot of sense to me, but I know that was one issue that was sort of flagged up.
So Hertha has presented their plans for the stadium. But there's the city and Hertha, I think they're having secret talks. And the thing is that parliament, the Berlin Senate has to vote, not the Senate, but the Berlin parliament has to have a vote on whether Hertha gets to lease the land.
Mm.
And then they also have to decide on a price.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. And there's been
all sorts of argy-bargy going on in the background.
Yes.
To try to resolve it. I mean, not everybody likes the idea of...
Oh, some people totally hate it.
I will probably be in that camp, personally.
I wouldn't mind a new stadium.
I can see the advantages to it, but do I personally want to move? No, if I was honest. I think the Olympiastadion is a magnificent stadium.
You always have these empty seats.
Yeah, well, if you don't like the empty seats, you don't look at them, do you? There's plenty of full seats that you can look at.
Let's say it's
the atmosphere is still, even with, you know, 42,000, because I think the capacity, you know, without the extra staging is, what, 76,000?
74.
Yeah. Is it 74? Yeah, I think you're right, actually, 74 something. So it's still, I mean, it's over half full, but there's still, yeah, a pretty good racket being made by the fans there.
Well, one of the arguments Hertha made was that they did a noise analysis in the stadium.
Really?
Yes. And one of their reasoning is that they could win 5 to 6 points a season more if it was if the fans were closer to the game. Because it would be a better atmosphere. Because lots of the noise gets carried away by the wind.
Yeah, all right, okay.
So that's one argument. One argument would be the financial situation of Hertha. One can say that.
I mean, that's true. I mean, there is a financial argument in that if we had a new stadium that was owned by the club, all the money that, you know, from the ticket sales, the catering and all that kind of malarkey would all come to the club. But you've got to finance the building of that stadium, haven't you?
Investor.
So that investor is going to want to have a return on that investment. Otherwise, it's not a very good investment, is it? So
speaking of investments,
we're going to be massively in debt.
Speaking of investments, KKR, who gave Hertha some breathing room in 2015 when they bought 9% of Hertha's shares and gave them some. Yeah. Basically, KKR is a hedge fund company from New York, and they bought shares, and Hertha had some more money to buy back the
catering rights.
Rights and everything they sold out, sold away. Because Hertha has always been
quite dubious catering.
Hertha has always been pretty bad financially.
Yeah. But they bought them out now, haven't they?
They bought them out now. So the whole what Hertha says sounds very nice, but then you see, okay, they bought back the rights, so they paid more than they got from KKR. So that's more debt.
Yeah. Yep.
Then they're gonna put out. They just put out a bond.
They released a bond
with a pretty good percentage. So they have to buy that out. And Hertha is gonna. They're actually spending income they haven't made yet. So they're spending. They're already planning to spend their future revenue.
If this was a person, you'd be thinking, yeah.
So it's really hard to give a proper answer. Like I'm for, I'm against it.
I don't like the amount. It's two angles I don't like about it personally. It's just my personal view is that A, I really like the Olympiastadion. And B, the financing of a new stadium is more than a little bit scary, because that money is going to have to come from somewhere, and somebody's going to have to be paying it back.
Had to give to the city of Berlin two guarantees: a non-compete that they would not have concerts or anything at the stadium, the new stadium, so they would not be in competition
Which
with the Olympia
sense.
Stadium.
You can see why Berlin would want that.
And the other is that they would totally finance the whole thing privately, which means an investor.
Yeah.
So we might be looking at something Mercedes-Benz Arena, or I keep calling it Ali.
The Teddy. The Teddy Arena.
Oh, God.
It could be.
Teddy Arena. Great.
Oh, wow. I thought that was a cracking good idea. Huh. Okay, perhaps not then.
I think we covered most of it.
Yeah. So yeah, yes, it could happen.
It's not official. Everything is.
It's all up in the air.
Smokes and mirrors.
Yeah, there's all sorts of algy-balgy going on in the background, but it's something that's definitely lurking in the background there, definitely.
Oh, there was another idea floated before that they could change the Olympic Stadium, do some...
Modify it
and then have video screens in front of the empty seats that could be retractable. And that whole thing would have cost the city 200,000. At 200 million. And that's why city lean said that they're not going to do that.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But I mean, what something else relating to a new stadium, if they were to build it. I mean, one of our sort of colleagues asked what kind of things would be, you know, could be built into that to make it better, perhaps, you know, for locals, but also sort of visitors that are coming in from, you know, the UK or States or whatever, you know, people from outside. But they ought to try to incorporate, you know, bits of the history of the club is one thing that always struck me. What's he called? The old physio that, it's gone out of my head.
Old physio?
Physio, you know, from, you know, back in the 30s.
Hermann Horwitz.
Horwitz.
The doctor.
Horowitz. Is it Horowitz?
No, Horwitz.
Horowitz. Because he was really quite a...
trailblazer.
He was a trailblazer. Mm-hmm. He was an innovator in his field. And he ended up, it was in Auschwitz, wasn't it?
Auschwitz, yes.
So, you know, having stuff about people like that as part of the history of the club, I think would be a good thing to have there, personally. Jan's frowning at me, but...
I'm not.
I think that would be a nice thing. I mean, there's just oodles of history in the Olympiastadion. Some of it's quite dark, admittedly, but it is there. But I think it's important that even, you know, if they build a new plastic stadium, that, you know, they have strong links to the past, explaining some of the things that have sort of gone on, and because there's some positive stuff back there, and it'd be nice to have it there.
Athletic Bilbao, they moved apart from the old stadium, I think the entrance or something, and they had did a fan march and moved that thing to the new stadium, so the past would still be...
Yeah.
Integrated there somehow.
That's good. All good.
So that concludes the stadium.
Yeah, it's a big subject, and
sorry,
we probably sort of rambled our way through that quite a lot. But yes, it's on the cards. I think we have slightly different views on it between the two of us.
But
I think we've made that clear.
But it's not a yes or no. It's very complex.
Yeah.
It's not as we said earlier, it's a very complex...
Well, I'd rather not go. I'm quite clear on that. But if we do, they should definitely incorporate some of the history from you know, the club and their old surrounds. Because they've been there for a long time, you know. 63, wasn't it? Was it 63? 63,
yeah.
So that's a long time. I mean, an awful lot of fans, that's their whole lifetime and more. So it's important that history is acknowledged in whatever they end up doing.
Done. As long as they don't bankrupt the club.
Well, that's too. Yeah, bankrupt is bad on the whole.
And there's some instance of that with traditional clubs building their stadium and then going belly up.
Yeah.
Kaiserslautern, for example, is having problems with that right now. Being in the
third really don't want to go there.
Stadium over. Question answered. Next question. Simon.
Besides Patrick and Matt, two listeners from Canada.
Ed P. D. Puy and Canuck Tarheel.
Are there any other Hertha fans in Canada? Don't know the answer to that.
I wouldn't know.
If you're another Hertha fan in Canada, or just Canadian, you know, currently living somewhere else, do let us know, and we'll pass that information on to to our two Canadian listeners that we know about. So it's an interesting point. There's definitely downloads and things from Canada, but who's doing those? Yeah, no way of telling, of course. So we'll see if we hear anything from anybody, and we'll let you know.
Did Ines have a question too?
Ines was asking about the stadium. Should we talk about the stadium?
We did that.
We did that.
Didn't she ask? Oh no, Knipper 66. Hello, Sabine.
Hello.
She tweeted, "VfB BSC will be a good Aufbaugegner next Saturday." Sorry, don't know the English word for it. There is none. So her question is if Stuttgart, who are currently in 16th place with 11 points and only 9 goals to their name, with 29 goals against, would on paper be an ideal next opponent for Hertha.
It is indeed on paper.
But.
It's always a but with Hertha.
So was Düsseldorf.
Perhaps that could be a title. There's always a but for Hertha with Hertha. Yes, so would that be a good game for us to build up a little bit of confidence and get a bit of momentum going?
Certainly, but...
In theory, yes, it should be. Yes, it should be. As I've said repeatedly, almost every single sort of episode... never underestimate the ability of Hertha to cock up.
You said that half an hour ago or something.
I know. Well, it's just so true. Yes, in theory, it certainly should be.
And her other question she texted me was, we should talk about rumours in a newspaper that doesn't deserve the name, right?
No, it's not a newspaper.
Yeah, what?
It's a publication in the UK. That is reporting that two Premier League clubs, I believe it was Manchester United and Arsenal. Both of them looking at Arnie Meyer. They've been sort of watching him apparently furtively. So if you see a shady looking character with a collars up and a wide brim hat at a Hertha game, it could be from one of those two clubs watching Arnie Meyer play.
But
reportedly. They're going to have some sort of bidding war to try to pinch him. Reportedly,
I wouldn't comment on something done by the Sun as such, but there's been rumors before, and I've seen it mentioned over the summer. Of course, Arne Meyer is gonna draw attention the way he plays. He went through all the youth teams in the. The youth national teams in Germany. He was part of the U19 that won the German championship in May. And he's going to draw attention. And the situation you have right now is the Premier League is making way, 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 way more money than Bundesliga.
Yes.
So there might be...
That's quite a bit more.
Yes. So there might be a chance of him getting sold, but... The market being as it is, I wouldn't let him go for less than 100 million.
Is that euros or pounds?
Euro pounds.
Yeah, yeah. 100 million somethings. I mean, what was talked about in that article allegedly was like 30 million pounds.
Article.
Yeah, in the article in the loosest sense of the term. But I mean, in the Premier League, they pay that much for a waste paper basket, so... I can't see that happening somehow or other. Time will tell. So, people are snooping around it would appear. But what will happen? Get the old crystal ball out.
But last summer you had rumours that Clapton Hart is going to go for a price tag of 25 million euros to a team in England and...
Didn't happen.
Didn't happen, yes.
It's not going to happen now either.
I'm afraid so.
So... Yeah, so there is speculation out there, but we can live in hope that either the price tag can be a lot bigger than that, or it doesn't happen at all.
I would do the deal if we got Grujic for free, and they paid 100 million for Meyer.
I could go for that.
Yes, don't buy a second-hand car from Yen, and that's all I can say.
And we have another tweet that just came up.
Ooh.
Have a look-see, Simon. Oh, by somebody I know. It's my brother-in-law. At Carlo MR.
What he says, listener, is, haven't you shut up yet? No, he didn't say untrue. That at all. I just made that
untrue. He retweeted Bundesliga top 11 for the last match day by I Am Football News, which I've never seen before.
No.
And it has three Hertha players in the top 11. Grujic, Lustenberger, and Jahrstein.
Yeah.
No, we haven't seen it.
Yes, no, I haven't seen that. I saw somewhere else, actually, that there was a... Was it Kicker? I think it was Kicker saying that... So, but they didn't have Jahrstein, but they had Grujic, and I think they had Lustier. There was definitely two players.
They had Meyer and Plattenhardt.
What?
Goes to show that you can never trust the way these sports magazines give marks for players.
Are you sure that about Plattenhardt?
I'm pretty sure because I put it in a group. Hang on, I'll show you. Here, they had Plattenhardt and Grujic. Sorry, Plattenhardt and Grujic were on their top 11 of the match day.
What?
For Plattenhardt, I don't.
Grujic, fine, yeah.
But usually there's 800 million different sports news outlets that put out their top players, so...
Mm.
Rhabarber, as we say in German.
Yeah, so...
Rhubarb.
Yeah. So that's that. Anything else to finish off?
Yes, the next few matches.
Next few matches.
We just got done with match day 14. We have match day 15, 16, and 17. Three more games before the winter break. One home game, two away games. As mentioned before, Hertha will travel to Stuttgart, which are always part of the chants at the stadium. Right, Simon?
They are?
Yeah. Never heard? Scheiß Stuttgart. No?
No.
Ah. I'll explain next time.
Okay.
Okay, Stuttgart are in 16th place, have 11 points and a 9-29 goal differential. As we said earlier, should be an easy win.
Should be.
But. After that, we have the...
English week.
Or as Simon calls it, just a normal week.
It's just normal. I was going to say, every week's an English week for me.
Augsburg are coming to the Olympiastadion. They are currently in 14th place with 13 points and 20-23 goals. They have been slipping in the past few games.
Mm.
But also, they are very good offensively. And if they put all that into... Oh, I think the good thing is that Finn Bogason, the Icelandic striker, is injured. It's a home game. That's a plus. But Hertha also always has a hard time playing Augsburg. The away games in Augsburg are usually the 0-1s or boring draws we see.
It's another late night one, isn't it? The Augsburg game.
It's Tuesday. 8:30
on Tuesday night.
Yes. Yeah. It's an English week, so the games are, of course, later than they usually are. And to end the Hinrunde, Hertha travels to Leverkusen, where a former player has gone, we're not going to mention again. Right?
What, a player? They didn't actually play, did they?
Anyway. So, Leverkusen, as usual, was always very high ranked before the season, and then they muck up somehow. Mm-hmm. Currently in 11th place, 18 points, 20-25 goals. They are potentially a better team than Hertha. Currently, their position in the table doesn't give us that. But who would not remember the trouncings we got in the past by them?
That's going to be a tough one, I think, but we'll see. So you'd fancy our chances, certainly with the first game, maybe the second.
I want 4 points.
Really for the third.
I want 4 points for the last three games.
That would be reasonable. Time will tell. But we'll discuss the first of those two, the Away in Stuttgart and Augsburg at Home, in the episode 18, which will be coming up after that. We've had more random rambling in that podcast.
People can find us.
Well, it's DMTF Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, occasionally on Facebook.
we're both shaking our heads.
The website, dmtfpodcast.com, where you can listen to the podcast directly via that if you feel that way inclined. Or find your
podcatcher to use and look for DMTF Podcast.
You can find it on, on iTunes, SoundCloud.
Or your favourite podcatcher.
Or your favourite podcatcher.
What do you use?
Me?
Yeah.
I tend to use iTunes, personally. Or the built-in.
The built-in podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's nice,
all sorts of
nice apps for all the systems.
All sorts of things out there. So
we're always happy about reviews on iTunes.
That's always very nice. And it's nice if you sort of tweet things. It's quite good. We've had a rash of questions. Awash with questions today. So
very nice.
Very nice indeed.
It's good for us to get some feedback. So.
We're starting to think we've got more than one listener there. We might have to say listeners instead of
listeners.
But now
we have Patrick and Matt. So
gosh, that's two. Wow.
Greetings to Canada. Mm. Well, I think that wraps
it
up.
I think that's it, isn't it?
So it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.